Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
The following episode of A Taste of the Past has been brought to you by TechServe and the Lower East Side Ecology Center's 8th Annual After the Holidays e-waste event. The Ecology Center and TechServe are rolling out its 8th Annual After the Holidays e-waste event with 10 events planned in January to help you responsibly dispose of all your unwanted or broken gadgets. Help them meet their goal of collecting 100 tons this January by spreading the word to your friends and neighbors. For more information on these events, visit www.techserve.com.
Hello, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio, your host here on Heritage Radio Network. And A Taste of the Past, as always, we take you on a journey through culinary history. And today, we're taking you on a journey to Malaysia. I have with me as my guest, Sushila Raghavan. And Sushila is a Malaysian who has just written a beautiful book called Flavors of Malaysia, A Journey Through Time, Tastes, and Traditions. Welcome, Sushila. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Thank you, Linda, and I'm happy to be here too.
It's a beautiful book, and I've learned so much already, even though I was somewhat familiar with some Malaysian tastes, but I was really interested to read about something that was still very strange to me. Who are Malaysians, and what is Malaysia? It's this kind of group of islands down there, and I'm never quite sure who the original Malaysians are or what formed the country state of Malaysia. And I'm hoping today that you will not only enlighten us to the flavors of Malaysia, but the origins of those flavors and where they came from, who the people are. And reading the beginning of your book, I know you'll be able to do that because the whole first section of the book is wonderfully illustrated and researched. It's a wonderful read on the history of Malaysia.
Thank you, Linda.
Who is Malaysian? Who are the Malaysians?
The Malaysians are the main three groups, the Malays, Chinese, and the Indians. Then you have the other groups, which are the intermingling of these different groups, the Nonyas, the Kristangs, the Chedis, and the Eurasians. All these people make up Malaysia. And Malaysian food, of course, traces, when you trace back to the early history, it's the, with the Indian traders and the Indian Muslim traders and the Chinese merchants, traders, all through conquest, they came to Malaysia. And they also, the spread of religion is another factor that brought these people to Malaysia.
Well, a little qualifying note, too, which I forgot to read a more in-depth introduction of you. I mentioned at the top of the show that you are Malaysian. And how long have you been in America?
Well, I've been here, goodness, over...
how old were you when you moved?
I've been here nearly 29 years,
wow,
30
okay.
years. Yes.
And Sushila holds a Master's of Science in Food Sciences, and you did your studies in England for that, right?
Yes. I did my Master's in Food Science and Nutrition in England, and then I came over to the U.S. and started my PhD in Food Science and Nutrition. But I kind of halfway through, I left it.
Well, you were in the great department at NYU, the Department of Nutrition,
yes.
Food Studies, Health, and Public Health. And, you've I know that you've lectured quite a bit on food and food sciences, and particularly flavors and spice blends, and started your own company, in fact.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Taste of Malacca. Taste of Malacca, Asian spice blends. And these are, you can get these at Whole Foods?
Yes, you can get them at Whole Foods in the city, as well as in Westchester mm-hmm. and Connecticut. And also on my website.
Tasteofmalacca.com?
Yes.
Great. All right. So I just wanted to backtrack and state that, because you don't just come to this as, oh, a Malaysian, I think I'll write a cookbook. I mean, your life has been in the study of food and food sciences.
Yes.
So
yes.
This is really a qualified research project here.
Yes.
So
yes.
you were saying that because it, well, in the Taste of Malacca, I mean, Malaysia being the crossroads of the spice routes, you were talking about the cultural influences and the religions. So I'll let you go from there.
Yes, actually, first, as I said, the Indian traders came over, and then you had the Arabs coming, all trading in spices, nutmeg, clove, pepper. And what happened is, then the Portuguese came, and they wanted to monopolize the spice trade.
Mm-hmm.
Because Malacca was the center of the spice trade then, between the East and the West. So they wanted to come and monopolize, and they came and they conquered, and they started ruling Malaya then. It was called Malaya.
Malaya, yeah.
Yes, and they started ruling for about 130 years.
What was that, in the 15th?
In the 15th century. 14 something.
I think it might have been a Portuguese. There is in spice history and in history, there is a saying that whoever owns Malacca owns the world.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that was their currency. Spices were their currency. Right?
Oh, yeah, spices, silk, but mainly spices, right. Yes. And then the Dutch came.
Mm-hmm.
The Dutch were actually in Jakarta, which is Batavia at that point. And they came and they took over from the Portuguese. So they ruled for another 150 years or so. And then the British came. With the East India Company, and they took over Malacca. So Malacca was the center of the whole early history in Malaysia, really. And from there, all the different people who came there spread to other parts of Malaysia. And then you have the northern Thailand, the Kingdom of Ayutthaya was ruling parts of Malaysia. So they had a lot of Thai influence in parts of Malaysia, northern Malaysia. And then you see as I mentioned, the early Indian rule in Malaysia was very prominent, because if you remember the history, the Sriwijaya Kingdom, which was centered in Sumatra, and they were actually ruling Malaysia at that point. So there's a lot of Indian influence also early. And then with the Portuguese and the Dutch, and then the Chinese came again during the 15th century. Mm-hmm. The traders came from China. And you have the Arabs. You have then the neighboring Indonesian islands, Java and Sulawesi, all Sumatra. So all these people also came into Malaysia. And then, so the Malays, who are a major group in Malaysia, form at least 53% of the population, they actually, their ancestry came from, from the earlier Indian Muslims and the Hindus and the Muslims, as well as the Chinese from southern China, as well as if you trace back even earlier on, the Aborigines, the Orang Aslis,
right.
Who came actually from three different areas, all from southern China, or from the Andaman Islands, or from Burma. So they became also part of the Malay population, some of them, the Muslims. So the Malays have all these ancestry, plus from Middle East, from Pakistan, from around in Indonesia, the different groups, and they kind of intermarried and created the current Malay population.
So the major waves of immigration, as you describe them, are really southern China, Indian, and then the neighboring
countries,
islands,
especially Indonesia. And also then the Indians and the Chinese, of course, they came from China, especially, earlier years as traders and also immigrants. And And, you know, during the monsoon times, you know, you couldn't go back to the country. So they stayed there just mm-hmm. like the Indians, and they married locally, local Malay women. And then that came rise to the Nonyas, the Nonya Baba group.
Right.
And similarly, also the Indian traders and immigrants, the earlier Indian traders came in and, you know, with the monsoon seasons, they couldn't go back. And so they also stayed and they married locally. And the whole arising of the Indian Muslim or the Mamak community came about.
Mamak
means maternal uncle, you know.
Oh.
And they are they are the greatest entrepreneurs, food entrepreneurs and hawkers, you see. That they make wonderful, and a lot of their cuisine, like the roti canai, the mee goreng, have really the most popular cuisine, as I see it, and I love them, you know.
I think that's and people identify that immediately.
Oh, yes. And then, of course, later on, due to the British time, the British, of course, you know, they wanted to build roads, and there was thick jungles, and they wanted to build train tracks and things. And they wanted to develop the agriculture. So they brought in the labor from India and China. You know, they also needed clerical and administrative staff mm-hmm. they brought from India, because they could speak English. Like the southern India, a lot of them spoke English. So they brought them also for that. So this was the later migration in the 18th century, 19th and, you know, 1900s, 20th century. You know,
so it really was a long history of immigration and formation.
Yeah, then all this kind of married and intermingled, and where they started, you know, they went to the north, south, east, west, and then, you know, created cuisines that's a wonderful mix of all these cultures that you won't find in China or India or the Middle East or even in Portugal. Hmm. You know, they're kind of taken from each other, some of the flavors, as well as they've taken whatever ingredients in Malaysia has to offer and created truly something unique.
Well, now that it's amazing that you can even say that after going down that list of influences, cultural and national and religious influences, that there could be a cuisine that you would consider unique to Malaysia, this Malaysian cuisine. If there were one way or a flavor that you, or I don't know, a spice blend to you that defines Malaysian cuisine, what is that? How would you define Malaysian cuisine? A taste, let's say.
It's a number of things, you know. I mean, it's hard to really define, because you have all these different cultures, you know, giving rise to something called Malaysia cuisine. So the soul of that is the embodiment of all these different cultures and their cooking and their traditions. And it's also, Malaysian food is not just what we eat. You know, it's tied in with our everyday lives. You know, it's like, you know, what we sit at, how we sit at the table and connect with our daily families, as well as with our friends at school, with the vendors who come to our homes and what we eat from them. So it's really hard for me to say, except that I can say that spices are the basis of our cuisine. And whether it's the dry spices that was introduced by the Indians, or the wet spices like the galangal, the roots, and the rhizomes, or the lemongrass. And of course, our famous belacan, which I think you won't find anywhere else. And it's
belacan being
a fermented shrimp paste. And actually, it's not shrimp. We say it's tiny shrimps, but it's really krill. You know, it's called garagau in Malaysia, but it's a krill, which are the crustaceans, shrimp-like crustaceans, you know. So this may be something unique, you know, but a lot of it is
used in the Malay. And it's a smell you don't forget.
Yes, but after the smell, it's like durian. After the smell,
you need it to make the flavor.
Yeah, it just enhances. I mean, it's like the fish sauce that the Thais use,
right.
You know. Right. Once you get over it, it's totally enhancing. And so, I mean, so ingredient wise, it's a lot of these ingredients. Chinese foods have soy sauce, but then they have chilies different from their motherland. You know, mm-hmm. they bring these noodles from China, and they have transformed these noodles into the most amazing dishes that you never find anywhere in the world. you know, whether it's curry noodles, whether it's belacan-based noodles, shrimp-based noodles, you know, or it is laksas that the nonyas have created, which is, as you know, the nonyas, the Chinese traders married the local Malaybiamen. So what it is about the nonyas is, even though they observe the traditional Chinese ancestral celebrations, but the because of the Malay, they married the Malay women, you find the incorporation of the cooking of the Malays into the Chinese, and that's a wonderful
wonderful cuisine
combination. Yeah. So they've created wonderful noodle dishes too. And I tell you something, that's what I write in my book. My favorite are the noodle dishes, and every time I go to Malaysia, I'll discover something new. You could go to Sabah, you could go to Sarawak, and I find something, a new noodle dish. You can go to right north to Perlis and find another noodle dish. So it's just forever. There's no ending to these noodle
dishes. Well, you have some you have some wonderful recipes and very enticing photographs in the book. I glance through those photographs and I get hungry just looking at them. But it's interesting because the combination of spices and flavors in those dishes, it is... I'm going to say it's addicting, but I don't crave many foods or flavors often. I mean, I think I've met a food I don't like, but I like everything, but I truly crave those flavors occasionally. I can't say that I could eat it every single day.
Yes.
Because for me, it's not my normal food, but it's a flavor I really do crave. It's something about it that it's hard to put your finger on it because it's so textured and many layered with all the different herbs.
And also the interesting thing, Linda, is also the condiments. Mm. You've never seen the variety of condiments that we have in Malaysia.
Well, now that you mentioned sitting down, the cultural aspect, sitting down to table. One thing I thought it was interesting to tell our listeners, many of them may know Malaysian food or Nonya cuisine and be familiar with nasi lemak of the nasi dishes. Nasi meaning...
Nasi is rice, and rice, of course, is the centerpiece of our meal.
So it really is also a word for meal, right?
Yes, it's also a word because it's interesting because when you greet each other in Malaysia and you say, instead of saying, how do you do, how are you, you say, sudah makan, and sudah makan nasi. That means, have you eaten rice?
Yeah, it's interesting. Chinese say the same, don't they? Yeah.
Same thing, and without rice, it's not a complete meal for us. So, and nasi lemak is, of course, is one of our favorite rice based.
Well, you describe sitting down to a meal with friends or family, we'll describe the table for us.
Well, it's a big table. A dining table is very important in a Malaysian family. And we have a lazy Susan.
Yeah.
And then we have all the dishes on the big lazy Susan. And we just rotate it among all the members and scoop out the food and eat. I mean, depending on what the food is like, you know, whether it's rice-based, whether it's noodle-based.
But there are no set courses. Everything is pretty much brought out at one time.
Yes, everything. It's not like in America. Yeah, you have to. And in America, they also separate the dishes. They put rice and then they separate the salads, or the salads come first. But in Malaysia, you put everything together and you mix them together to get that wonderful textures and taste. You never separate, you don't separate your chicken or your rice or your vegetables. You mix them together, you blend them together and you eat them. And that's what creates a wonderful feeling at the meal table when you're eating these foods.
That's wonderful.
Different textures.
Well, we have to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more specifically about some of these recipes. Hi, we are back with our guest, Sushila Raghavan, who has written a wonderful book on Malaysian flavors and the origin of those flavors. And Sushila, we were talking about all the different influences and the wonderful flavors and dishes. What we haven't really talked about too much are some of the lesser influence group. Well, they're not lesser. I can't say lesser. Minority groups, but also the Portuguese and the Chitis. You have some specific dishes you would like to talk about.
Well, the groups are very influential in our flavors. Also, the Mamaks, as I mentioned, who are the Indian Muslims who came from India, mm-hmm. traders, and they married local Malay women. They still speak Tamil, but they dress in Malay attire and they cook a blend of Indian and Malay cooking. Now, with the Kristangs, the Kristang means Christian, actually. They are the Portuguese who settled, who came to Malaysia, who actually conquered Malaysia, as you know, and lived there. And they married the Malay women and also a little bit of the Nonyas. And their cuisine is very interesting because they've transformed all their soups and stews and things with the local flavorings. The local, they use a lot of chilies and belacan in their cooking. So it's very interesting, hot and spicy, unlike you see in Portugal. And then you have the Chiti groups, which is a very small group in Malacca. And you see some of them have gone to Singapore.
Who are the Chitis?
Are very interesting because they are Indian, again, from southern India. These traders came and they married local Malay women. So they don't speak Indian, but they speak Malay. They dress Malay, but they celebrate all the Indian festivals. So it's a very interesting group. So their cuisine has taken on the Indian and the Malay flavors, and it's truly amazing community in Malacca. And then, of course, I think I mentioned everything. The Nonyas I've talked about.
I think as far as groups and influences. Now, you mentioned hot and spicy, and I do often relate hot and spicy with Malaysian cuisine. Is it? But it's not all hot and spicy.
Not all. No. I think it all depends. That's what people have this perception. Like you said, it's hot and spicy. It's not. A lot of the dishes are not hot. And they are not
spicy. A lot of the curries are not hot. They're very meaty and saucy.
Yes. And again, depending on your individual taste, you can add more chilies, as I've said in my book. If you want more chilies, you can add. You want little less chilies, you can add. And Chinese cooking is really not hot. And remember also, in Malaysia, for Chinese noodles and all that, they have these spicy condiments. So at the table, you can add that heat to your food if you want, using these condiments.
So everything is personalized.
It is personalized, yeah, yes. Nice. Most of the spicy foods are really the Malay cooking. Mm-hmm. That is spicy.
Well, there are some very important elements of Malaysian life that is tied into food. And you talk in the book all the time about snacking and how the Malaysians love to snack. And yes. I was getting hungry because I wasn't snacking. And you go around and didn't you just finish a meal? Now you're going and buying snacks from a vendor. Yes. But the vendors are a very important part of Malaysian food life, are they not?
Yes. Oh, gosh. The vendors, we call them hawkers. And they are our chefs, really. I remember growing up, Saturdays, we wait for the vendors. That's a break for mom, especially before lunch. We all get hungry. So the Chinese vendor will come and sell us his soup noodles. And then comes along on a Sunday morning, the nasi lemak vendor. He'll be carrying like a pole across his shoulders with two bags hanging. And then he would open his delicacy nasi lemak and we would all go in and have it for our late breakfast. Mm. And then, of course, we would also go to our vendors like we had food stalls like you have in malls here. And we had it in open air, food stalls. And we would go there with the family and have a nice meal together. Oh, actually, my father's favorite was these coffee shops.
Coffee
Kadai, they're called. Yeah. And these were these were our restaurants growing up because...
But you call them coffee shops.
We're coffee shops because really the people would go there and have coffee with snacks or soups, and then they also have meals. And these are actually the downstairs of shop houses in Malaysia. Mm. And they have very simple tables and chairs. And that I remember being excited to going, because these were our restaurants, a break from our home cooking. And we would have nasi goreng, fried rice, or fried noodles as soups, as simple dishes, And my father, of course, would go with his friends and have his breakfast sometimes of toasted sandwiches with the local jam, kaya.
Coconut jam?
Coconut egg jam, kaya, yes. And then his coffee, thick black coffee, you know. So these were really, it was only later on that we started getting restaurants, regular restaurants, just for food. But the coffee shops were our daily life growing up, especially in small towns.
Well, then the hawkers and the food stalls, they are open throughout the day. I mean, and the night market. You have night markets as well?
We have night markets. A lot. We grew up. I remember night markets, and every town has it. Outside in a rural setting. And the night markets not only have foods, but also they have all kinds of knickknacks for the house, you
like
know,
bazaar,
CDs
like
or clothes and like a bazaar. So it was fun, you know, going there and eating fresh food out of the wok. I mean, noodles or rendang. And also they would sell fresh produce, vegetables, even chicken and meats and so on. So this is part of our life growing up, and also they still exist today for the rural areas. And wet markets, of course. I mean, this is another part of our life. We did not have supermarkets growing up. So now you do, of course. But growing up, my father would just go every week and buy produce for the house and chicken and his favorite area.
You called them wet markets?
We call them wet markets because they would hose it down with water at the end of the day and clean it. Yeah, so they were always fresh. Like you have these markets here, you know, like Union Square has this market. Yeah,
so many of our green markets are farmers markets.
Yeah, right. But these had also the chicken and the meat and the fish. And as a child, it was difficult for me to go through them, but gutted fish and so on.
Right.
But my father's favorite places. But of course, the vendors are, you would find them everywhere. You find them near offices, next to hotels, alleyways, all over. They're everywhere. And all these vendors, a mama person will be selling a snack of banana fritters, or maybe as a snack during office 3 to 4, you're going to eat them. Or maybe lunchtime, a Chinese vendor would be making char kway teow, which is a rice noodle dish. Or another person will be selling an Indian with some peeled fruit. So there's always, vendors were all part of our life. And these are, they'll have their mobile carts in front, in anywhere you can, any space they can find, you know. But they're kind of disappearing now, actually.
Well, it's funny because I think they must all be coming to America. Because we are seeing such an influx of mobile food carts or food trucks or, you know, the
I think they'll do very well. Vendors. Yeah, yes.
And the vendor trucks, I mean, selling everything imaginable from tacos to Malaysian food.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's no longer just hot dogs on the street, but you can get such a variety of foods in New York City in particular, but I know other cities as well.
Yes,
so maybe we're adopting,
what I grew up with.
Right, the Malaysian flavors,
yes.
Right. That's wonderful. And street food being, it's a great equalizer in society as well, because everyone goes to a street vendor in Malaysia, correct? I mean,
everyone goes.
Different walks of life.
It could be the highest CEO or, you know, down to a person, a clerk or anybody working in a store goes to a street vendor. It's no class or status associated with that, you know. It's just, and I think the thing, it is also prepared fresh. Everything is just prepared fresh then given to you. You know, you're either standing up and eating next door, or they have little rickety stools or tables you sit down and eat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's such an experience. And I think that's one thing any visitor to Malaysia should try to experience.
That. I think it's interesting because America has gotten or became so hung up on health standards and, you know, having to pass the Board of Health directives on cleanliness and how food was kept. But if it is out there and cooked fresh and served fresh and it doesn't stay around very long because people are all there buying it, that doesn't seem to be a problem.
No, it isn't a problem. And also these days, the government has also very strict control over these. They have designated certain food stalls, certain areas, and there's very strict sanitary codes imposed on them. But again, you're right. If it's just cooked fresh and you eat it, it really shouldn't be an issue, you know?
Well, over your lifetime of having lived there and then going back to visit family and just, you know, to make a visit, How have you seen the food change over the years, or have you indeed seen the food change?
I mean, I have seen changes. I mean, we do not get the door-to-door vendors anymore. Mm. You don't see that. And also, we do see more fancier restaurants, upscale. And I mean, but they do still serve similar food. But then you also get the fast food chains, you know, Taco Bell and Pizza and Pizza Hut and all that, McDonald's.
We took the food stalls and you got our big chains.
But
right?
I think some of them also still try to retain the Malaysian flavor. For example, McDonald's chili sauces, they take the Malaysian flavor, try to incorporate into their ingredients, because I think Malaysians are still fussy about their foods. They still want to eat the food the way it is. You know, you have the Mediterranean cuisine, you have the American cuisine, you have all these now. But many still go to these mama cafes. You call it pubbing here, going to pubs. They call it mamaking, going to mama cafes and eating that local food and enjoying that. Students, office workers, anyone.
But the flavors, by and large, the flavors are still there, the original
flavors. Are still there, yes. They may have been tweaked here and there for health reasons, perhaps using less oil or not so much heat, or trying to incorporate quicker ways of preparing it, which is what I do in my book. I've simplified the recipes. I've maintained the authenticity, but yet trying to make it easy to prepare and quick, and also a little healthier.
Well, now, do you, and that's, we haven't had a chance yet to talk about specific recipes, but they are all, I mean, you've really adapted them for the American kitchen beautifully,
yes.
I have to say that. Because that's always a difficult thing to do with a lot of this. And I have to say, too, I mean, in you talk about all the different influences, and you did confess to loving the noodle dishes, which, you know, the Chinese brought over with them. Do you think you give pretty fair play to all the different styles of cuisine, or is there a favorite? You have an absolute favorite that you lean towards more?
See, what I have done is when I've been to restaurants here, they generally cook only the Chinese, Malaysian, or the a little bit of the Malay they'll take, but they haven't really represented Malaysian cuisine. That's one of the reasons I wanted to write this book, because I wanted to really represent every cuisine in there from Malaysia, you know, all the flavors. So it was, I think that's what Malaysian cuisine is. But again, the curry section, you see all different curries, not just, you know, a Nonya curry, a Kristan curry, or a Malay curry. So all this I've incorporated. And also, I take you also on a tour of regional cooking of Malaysia, where a curry could be different from in Kuala Lumpur, maybe different in the north, in Kelantan, with the Malay influence and the Thai influence. So I try to incorporate all these differences or talk about it in my book. And I think for me, as I said, my favorite section was writing the noodles, even though it was not an easy chapter to write, to simplify the recipes. The curries also are very interesting. The condiments are interesting. It's hard for me to pinpoint. I think the dessert was for me the most difficult to write. I'm not really a dessert person, but, you know, and Malaysia's really, one good thing is they're trying to take the flavors of Malaysia and adapting it with more of a European and a different flair in a lot of the hotels and restaurants. And I think they have some nice, I had to cut down a lot of the sugar and so on, because people love it. They have a sweet tooth. We have a sweet tooth. So, I mean, and then I also given you a festival chapter where foods at different festivals are celebrated with. And our festivals are like open houses. We call them Rumah Terbuka. It's not like here you have to specially invite people there. Whoever comes in, drops in, and we have to have the food there in our food to serve them. So it's a beautiful way of celebrating your foods with the other cultures, and they celebrating theirs with our culture. So it's a wonderful
tradition.
Yes, it's wonderful.
And your personal background, your heritage in Malaysia is what?
Well, my heritage is my father came as a little boy from India, from Kerala. My mom was born in Malaysia. So it's of Indian extract. But then my brothers have married Chinese and other races. And so we have kind of grew up with all these.
So it's a true Malaysian family.
True Malaysian family, yes.
Well, you have done a beautiful job in this book, really taking us on a journey through time and tastes and traditions in Malaysia. And if someone picks up the book and looks through it and reads it, as I did, you really do understand and get the flavors of Malaysia. And the book is called Flavors of Malaysia with Sushila Raghavan. Thank you so much. It's been a wonderful talk with you.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for having me here.
Great. And again, thank you for listening. I'm Linda Palacio, and you've been listening to A Taste of the Past.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.